This is Startups for the Rest of Us, episode 72. Welcome to Startups for the Rest of Us, the podcast that helps developers, designers, and entrepreneurs be awesome at launching software products, whether you've built your first product or you're just thinking about it. I'm Rob.
And I'm Mike.
And we're here to share our experiences to help you avoid the same mistakes we've made. And if you stick around to the end of the episode, we are going to be talking in depth about 8 tactics for building your pre-launch mailing list. What's going on this week, Mike?
I recently installed a Boomerang and
Reportif. Yep. I use both of them as well.
So I was in the trolling the Micropreneur Academy forums the other day, and somebody had posted a link to SEO Moz where they talked about all these different email hacks, basically. Two of them were to use Boomerang and Reportif to essentially allow you to enhance your Gmail experience. And so what Boomerang does is it allows you to take an email and essentially market such that it will come back to you later. And you can also use it to reply to somebody. And then if you don't hear back from them within a certain amount of time, which you can kind of customize, then it will essentially end up back in your inbox. So you're not using your inbox as this, you know, just giant black hole where you're sending everything and then trying to look through it and figure out what things you need to pay attention to and which ones you don't, which is really kind of nice because it allows you to keep your inbox fairly empty, which I prefer to do. And then whenever you need to actually pay attention to something, something will back in there. So I got an email saying in the Business of Software conference tickets went on sale, and it's, I think you have until March 30th for the pre-sale tickets, and then the price goes up. But I have it set to come back into my inbox later this month, I think the 23rd or 24th, so then I can pay attention to it later.
Right. Yeah. And I've been using Boomerang since Dan Andrews talked about it on the Lifestyle Business podcast maybe 6 months ago. And I use it. I'm now a subscriber. It actually, you get a 30 or 45 day free trial and it's $5 a month. And it was a total no brainer. I probably have at any given time 20 to 30 emails that are hanging around in the Boomerang engine waiting to come back to me. And I do a lot of, you know, I'll email with someone on Hittail. They're either canceling or they decide not to sign up, but they tell me like, well, I need to relaunch my website and then I'll use it. And I'll say, hey, you know, when do you think you'll be relaunched? And they'll tell me, oh, in March or in May. And I'll totally ping myself back in May and then touch base with them. And I have landed, I've mentioned on the podcast before, but I've definitely landed hundreds of dollars worth of business purely because of touching base with people again. And how about Reportif?
Reportif hooks into your Gmail account, and on the right-hand side, when you're sending emails and stuff, when you have an email address selected in like the to or in the BCC box, over on the right-hand side, what it actually does is it takes a copy of that email address and sends it to their servers and then does a search through LinkedIn and Facebook and Twitter and shows you all of the related information for that person. So if you get an email from out of the blue from somebody that you don't know, or you're trying to, you know, identify an email address or try and figure out who somebody is, that basically does kind of a social search and tells you information that's publicly available about that person.
Yeah, and I've really liked it for two reasons. One is because it'll pull their profile picture from LinkedIn or from somewhere else if it's there.
And yeah, actually, that's really nice.
Isn't it cool? It's like it gives you an idea of what they look like. And it actually, like I was doing some Hittail support before I had a VA doing it. And it would give me an indication of like, oh, this person is a 40-something male or a 50-something male. And it's like, well, I'm going to have to talk to him differently than if he's like a 22-year-old male or, you know, a 22-year-old woman. I mean, it just, I'm making assumptions based on appearance. But it actually helped me. I mean, I would provide more assistance and, you know, kind of more insight. In addition, it really does just help you kind of get in the mindset of who you're talking to and who you're actually dealing with. And it allowed me to, there were a lot of people who I'd email with who was like, oh, I want to follow this guy. Sure enough, they put a follow button right there where you can follow on Twitter or LinkedIn or whatever.
Yeah, so I've been using those tools the past week or so. It's been a pretty interesting experience so far. And I don't think I've gotten quite the productivity gains yet. But I mean, really, it hasn't been very long. And it actually has helped me to cut my inbox roughly in half. I mean, I usually keep it less than 10 or 15 emails at any given time. And in the past, I'd say month or two, it's gotten up over 50. So it's definitely cut it down just in the past week or so using it.
Nice. So, hey, I was at LessConf 2 weeks ago, and there was one presentation in particular. It was the last presentation, and I honestly forget who the guys were. They gave some of the worst startup advice I've ever heard. And I don't typically, like, if someone says something that's debatable, you know, or it should be discussed or something, I'm like, all right, that's cool. But one of the things they said, and then they pounded away at it, was that looking at data, like looking at your past data and trying to optimize funnels and looking at conversion rates, looking at data is like trying to steer a boat by looking out the back of it. You're only looking in the past and you should be looking out the front. And then they went on to say like how data is fallible and how data isn't very good and how you should trust your gut because you're an entrepreneur. And the entire time I was flabbergasted at the examples they were giving of like, don't optimize funnels. And they showed a picture of a funnel and it was all squiggly. And they made the statement, no one does a Google search for project management software, clicks a link and signs up for a trial. No one does that. Everyone goes to social media. And I mean, they were seriously making blanket statements like that. And when I got out, I talked to a few folks, more, you know, designers and then other entrepreneurs. The entrepreneurs that I know who are actually being successful were blown away by the comment. It's not to say you certainly shouldn't focus everything on data, right? You have to be creative and you have to be innovative and you have to treat your customers really well. And that's what they were saying was the flip side, is that data is like the antithesis of that. And like manipulating data and focusing on it means you're not focusing on your customers. But I just feel like there's a balance, man. I would never use the word never in a presentation like that. I just wanted to say, like, you know, you and I are fairly data driven, but if anyone has the idea that we are 100% data, and you don't worry about your customers, like that is obviously not a correct response either.
Yeah, I think you have to strike a balance. And there are cases where you look at the data, if there's not enough data or you're looking at too narrow a slice of that data, then you don't necessarily see the trends that you need, or you're extrapolating too much from a specific trend. It's kind of like statistics. You really have to take anything you're looking at with a grain of salt, and eventually, sometimes it just does come down to a judgment call or a gut check. I see what your point is. I mean, when I saw the title of that, looking at your data is like trying to steer a boat by looking out the back of it. I think if you are in something that is changing extremely rapidly, then that's probably true. You know, 9 times out of 10, it's true. But I think that if you're looking at things like funnel conversions and things like that, which really are very data driven, then I think that it breaks down a lot. I think you can't generalize like that and just blanket statement say it to everything.
Right.
We're up to 124 ratings on iTunes.
Wow. Wasn't our goal 125? By MicroConf?
I believe yours was.
Yours was 2. Nice. Oh, that's right. But we got this big bump because we were only looking at US numbers before. Yeah. So right. US numbers are probably in the 90s or something.
Yeah, 94, yeah. I think it was.
Okay.
So we're up to 94 for the US and 30 for the rest of the world. And so we've gained 4 over last week. And I think TechZing's gained 1 over the last week. So I'm sure that they're going to be whipping their users into shape to try and get some more reviews.
Seriously, if folks want to help us out in this competition, we have a friendly competition with the TechZing podcast. You head into iTunes, search for startups, and just give us, even if you don't give a full like commentary review, you can just click, I mean, it's 5 stars to 1 star. We love a 5 star, of course, but you can just click that and you'll be done as long as you're logged in. So it's not even that much effort. So hey, I wanted to give folks an update on HitTail. I did a relaunch in January. It was around January 9th. And so I got a big spike of trial signups. A blog post I wrote went to Hacker News to the front page. And then I've been on a few podcasts. And so I've been getting some good trials in there. And I had a conversion rate in mind of how many of those would go to paid accounts. When the 30-day trial expired, that was like February 9th. And so all of February, I was gearing up. I'm like, oh man, I'm going to be, you know, making more money and increasing the revenue and stuff. And it went up just a tiny bit. I'm frankly quite disappointed with it. So I'm feeling a little down this month and kind of looking at what my other options are. I'm thinking that I have a whole market that I'm going to go after, which is like e-commerce websites. And I haven't even started marketing to them because I'm going after more of the startup audience right now, just because it's more accessible to me, but thinking that they're not going to convert that well. So kind of the next step in the plan. But I guess I just want people to know, like, these setbacks are very common, right? It's like, you're going to have a plan, you're going to try something, and it's probably going to fail. And so I could give up right now and say, all right, you know, that's it. This whole thing failed. Next. But that's not how you got to do it. If you're an entrepreneur, you come back and you say, well, how do I fix it? What went wrong? And what can I try over the next couple of months to try to actually grow revenue more?
Do you need a hug?
I think I do.
I do want to say a special thanks to the guys over at Verello. That's V-E-R-E-L-O. They heard we were having some problems with the Micropreneur Academy and keeping it up, so they actually offered to donate us an account to help keep track of when the Academy goes down. And I think we talked about it on the last episode or the episode before that, but we've basically had some hosting issues with it, and they offered us an account to help us monitor the situation. And their service is very similar to things like Pingdom, where it'll let you know if your site's down. The major difference that I've seen so far is that they do it at a sub-minute level. So whereas Pingdom will ping your site once a minute, they have the ability to go in and check it at the sub-minute level. They also have notifications that you can set up such that if your site goes down or returns a specific error code a certain number of times, and you can configure that number of times, then it will send you an alert, and then it will check again on a configurable time period to let you know when it comes back up. So it's really cool so far. I really kind of like it. Definitely check it out if you get a chance.
Yeah, thanks, Varello. Final piece before we get into the content. You have a prediction for tomorrow, is that right?
Yeah, so today is Tuesday, March 6th, and tomorrow Apple is coming out with all their new stuff. My prediction for tomorrow is a touchscreen iMac, and I could be right or wrong, but that's my prediction.
My prediction is that you're wrong. There's no chance. It's an iPad announcement. Maybe small chance of an Apple TV. But, bravo for going out on a limb. I like gutsy predictions.
The thing is, for the listeners, don't think this was completely out of the blue or totally out of left field, but there's been a lot of talk about possibly a touchscreen Apple TV or something along those lines. And I saw some analysis of the images that were sent out for the Apple TV press releases, and they were pointing out things like, if you look at the finger that's pushing down on the icon and the size of the icon relative to the finger, the icon is huge related to that finger. And I even checked it on my iPhone and my iPad, and it's the size shown in the picture is enormous for that icon as compared to an actual iPad or an iPhone. And it also points out that there's no home button on whatever the device is. The only thing I could think of was an iMac where it actually lays down flat on your desk, and it's basically like an oversized iPad. But you use it as if it was a full-blown desktop. And then, obviously, if it's got USB ports, you could plug a mouse into it or, a trackpad or what have you, and use it as if it was a full-blown desktop. And, it would just sit flat on your desk instead. So, or maybe at a slight incline or something like that, kind of like an iPad when you've got, special cases on them.
Right. It seems like it would have to be at some angle, because that would kill my neck to look down ergonomically. Mm-hmm. That wouldn't be very good. Before we dive into our 8 tactics for building your pre-launch mailing list, we have one call-in question that we wanted to answer.
Hi, Mike and Rob. I'm a very big fan of your podcast, and I'd like to say thank you very much for all the helpful information that you guys share every week. I have a quick question for you. I'm looking for a toll-free number provider. I need a toll-free number to put on my website that would allow people to call in and record questions pertaining to the subject matter of my blog that I could, the recorded messages I could use later in blog posts. It's probably something similar to what you guys have at the service that you provide from your podcast webpage as well. So I'd appreciate any feedback that you can provide. Thanks a lot, and keep up the great work.
Yeah, thanks for the question. Basically, for the podcast, we use Call 8, and that's K-A-L-L and the number 8. And it's $2 a month for an 800 number. And then if there are calls in, you pay us a few cents a minute. And so we have, I think I have 5 or 6 total, between the podcast and just several businesses I have. But I haven't really had any issues with them. It sounds like that'll do everything you want. And it's nice because they'll just email you when someone calls, and they attach a WAV file of the message. So you never even have to log in or try to forward stuff if you want to just use the audio straight from there. So we're going to dive into the main content, and that is 8 tactics for building your pre-launch mailing list. And this comes from a question. It's based on a listener question from Josh Kolbach. And he says, "Hey guys, I have a topic suggestion for you. I'm currently going through the process of setting up my marketing efforts for my first product, which is a premium WordPress plugin for affiliate marketers. My topic suggestion is strategies for getting people to sign up for your pre-launch email list. I have a pre-launch website up at the moment at thirstyaffiliates.com. And with just the small trickle of visitors coming through at the moment, the conversion rate is quite good. I want to launch this thing soon, but I'm concerned my pre-launch isn't big enough. Do you have any strategies that I can use to get interested traffic over to my high converting pre-launch website so I can build up my pre-launch list? Appreciate any advice you can give. Love the podcast. Listen to the whole back catalog and loved it. Keep up the good work. We are going to dive into several tactics. I think the first question, I kind of want to preface this whole episode because we often give tactics for doing certain things. There are three questions that you should ask before you blindly follow what we've said here. The first question is, can you market your product online? This isn't for Josh, because obviously Josh is marketing to affiliate marketers, and so the answer for him is yes. If you have a product and you're thinking about putting up a just a landing page and collecting emails, you really have to ask yourself, can you market it online? Because if my brother example works in construction, and that's not something that's typically marketed well online, and I wouldn't put up a launch list if I was going to try to start an electrical contractor, as an example. But anything dealing with any type of community that's online, of course, can take advantage of this. The second question is, are people searching for it, or will you have to go to them? We have to go out and find them. So do they ever type this kind of thing into Google or WordPress search or, you know, the iTunes App Store or Amazon or any of these things, any of those traffic streams, can you get in front of them? And if not, then you need to think about whether you want to try to market a product where people are not actively searching for it, because we have suggestions in this, you know, obviously in this episode. There are a lot of ways to do marketing, inbound marketing, but it definitely takes a lot of work, and it's not just something you can sit back and kind of enjoy the long stream of traffic like you can when people are actually searching for it. And then the third question is, are you launching something that's a really new concept or that's extremely complex and that people aren't going to easily understand? Because in that case, having just a simple landing page might be more of a challenge. You could always throw a video up there, but realistically, if you're building enterprise software or something where people need education, then you're going to have a high-touch sales process, and a lot of the techniques we talk about just aren't as valuable or aren't going to work as well. That's how I will preface this entire episode. Now, with Josh's example in particular, his answer to all three of these things is that he should be, you know, looking at the tactics that we're going to give in this episode. But think about those before you implement this stuff. So to get started, we're going to talk about our first tactic recommendation for building a pre-launch mailing list. And the first thing that I always recommend is that people utilize their existing audience. So if you have a mailing list, if you have a blog, if you have a podcast, if you have a Twitter following, then that's going to be your first line of defense, essentially, right? These are the people that already know you and ideally are in your target market. If you have no audience in your target market, obviously that makes it a lot harder to attack this kind of thing. If you already have an audience of any kind, I would tend to recommend that you maybe try to think of an idea where you can actually utilize an audience you already have.
And one of the things that Rob is kind of getting at is, if you have an audience already, then chances are you're already plugged into that audience and you have a much better chance of succeeding with your product. And driving people to a pre-launch mailing list kind of goes hand in hand with building your product, because if you can drive enough people to that mailing list, then you can justify that there is a market for that particular product and then go build it. And, you know, some people like to build first and then check later, but we tend to stress that you really need to make sure that there is a market and that there are people willing to pay for what you are intending to build before you go out and build it, because you could spend those 10 months or 6 months building something and then find out that nobody's actually willing to pay for it. They may think it's cool, they may think it's a nice idea, but they're not actually willing to pay money for it. Again, going back to that, it's very important that if you have those people who are interested in it, if you have a market that you're already plugged into, leverage that in every way, shape, or form. And I think that people will be willing to help you if you ask them. That's something else you can do. You can just simply ask them for help. Say, hey, do you know anyone who would be interested in this? You can use things like sharing buttons when you send emails to them. A lot of the different mailing list providers have things that, you know, you can share through Facebook or Twitter, or, you know, send via email, etc. Because people who are in whatever these markets tend to know one another. They tend to know other people who are also in that market. And you can just ask them. Asking people for other leads is extremely effective, especially if they know that you're either just starting out or you come across to them as a very genuine person and you're trying to succeed. People are willing to help.
The second tactic we recommend is something we talk about quite a bit, and that's search engine optimization. And the reason, you know, that I'm a big fan of this is because there are so many people searching for stuff all the time, and you are essentially inserting yourself in that traffic stream that Google or Bing provides. And so while SEO is certainly not the silver bullet that's going to make all businesses, and something, whenever I talk about SEO, I often hear people come up and say, well, you know, my audience isn't really online. And that goes back to one of the questions I said up top. It's like, can you market this online? And if not, are you willing to do what it takes to go and market it offline? The thing that I found with SEO is if you can find an app or a product where people are actually searching for the product itself, you have really lucked out. That's more of an unusual case, but that's a really nice way to get a lot of people coming to your site quickly. Obviously, you have to learn SEO, and it's way more complicated than something that we're going to go and do in this episode. One tactic I've seen used really successfully surrounding SEO is that even if someone's not searching exactly for what you have, so say you have invoicing software, which, you know, I own .NET Invoice, and there are searches for invoicing software, but there are a heck of a lot more searches for invoicing templates. And when people search for invoicing templates, they're looking for like Word docs or Excel docs. And so it's this related thing that's like a replacement for invoicing software. And since so many more people are searching for that, it's probably a good idea to go after a term like that, set up a landing page, give them what they want, give them some invoicing templates, but then either ask for an email in advance or, you know, have a banner or just some words in that invoicing template that's like, hey, if you really want to step up your invoicing, you should try out our software. So that's one example of kind of going an alternate route, and you don't necessarily have to SEO for the exact phrase of what your software is or what your product is, but you can kind of go a roundabout way there and get people and hopefully convert them to your software through those means.
So the third method you could use is some sort of an infographic or another piece of viral content that you can share. Typically, you can use something, as I said, an infographic is a very simple image that you're going to want to use. Make sure that you keep the file size down. But another thing you can use is a short interview or a transcript or an excerpt from an interview, and send that out to people either on your mailing list or through Twitter. And you can use that to help drive traffic to a website where, you know, you're going to obviously ask for people's email addresses. Depending on the industry, obviously, you're not going to want to do that where the results are simply not going to work for you online, for example, in the construction industry. But there's a lot of places where it can. So anything that is marketing related, technology related, those types of things, basically what you're trying to do is just get somebody's attention, and what basically helps drive them through that and put them into your, you know, much larger sales funnel on your website.
Yeah, this is a big deal if you don't already have an audience and you think there is any potential for having some virality to your content. I've actually seen this work and heard of it working in smaller niches, like quasi offline niches, like veterinary stuff, because there may be a few forums and a few places where people share content, and they're not used to having high quality content like infographics or, you know, a 15-minute interview being put out. I think the other niche I heard someone using it with success was in like horse breeders. They just aren't used to having kind of multimedia content put out. And so if you did a 15-minute interview where you interviewed like a successful breeder that most people knew about, was kind of a big name, and then you got a transcript made of that and you posted on a forum or you emailed, you know, a few folks, I would bet that would spread pretty quickly. And as long as you include some type of branding or basically letting folks know what your app is or what, you know, what the product is you're selling, that's a good way to start getting awareness built up. And so even in the non, you know, it's not super techy niches, it's not going to spread like it would on Twitter. But if you're the only one doing it, you can pretty quickly build yourself a kind of a viral brand using this. The next tactic, number four, is Hacker News or equivalent. And obviously, if you're listening to this, you probably know what Hacker News is. But what a lot of people don't know is there are other social news sites that serve different audiences. So there's like there are small business social news sites, there are social news sites for designers, social news sites, even for some kind of offline niches. And so if you go to Google and type in top 100 social news sites or niche social news sites, that's where the or equivalent comes in, because obviously Hacker News is a very specific audience, and if you're not targeting them, it doesn't do you any good to get on the front page. And since there's not a ton of competition, there's not a huge audience, but there's also not a ton of competition in a lot of the niche social news sites, it's not that hard to hit the front page and get a little momentum. Now, I can imagine someone listening to this and saying, well, you know, I don't want to put in the effort, or I don't want to spend the time to write articles and get onto the front page of, you know, whatever smallbizweekly.com or whatever. Because I hear this objection from time to time, and it's like, you know, you got to be willing to put in something. Like, you really need to be willing to put in money to advertise, or you need to be willing to put in time to get this off the ground, because this stuff is not easy. And while Mike and I can't lay out every possible tactic for doing this, all of these tactics take one thing or the other, right? They do take money or time to implement.
And you have to remember that when you're first starting out with any business, I mean, you really have to do a lot of things that simply don't scale. So if you have to go talk to 10 or 20 people in order to get the word out, yeah, you're not going to be able to do that forever. But the intent of doing that is to kind of get you over that initial hump so that other people will start talking about you on your behalf, so that it will help get the word out and you don't have to be there every single time. And one thing to elaborate on what Rob said earlier about Hacker News, I mean, Hacker News is kind of an offshoot of Reddit, and there are a lot of subreddits over there that you can go into. So it may not fit into specifically what your niche is that you're looking at, but there are a lot of subreddits that you could go into that may somehow apply to that.
So tactic number 5 of 8 for building a pre-launch mailing list is Facebook ads. And the reason we bring this one up is that Facebook ads are still available at fairly reasonable cost. Whereas Google AdWords tend to be a lot more expensive, you can actually get Facebook ads pretty easily into the 80 cents to $1.20 per click. And if you use some crafty techniques, you can actually get some down in the 10 to 20 cents per click range. And if you check out, there's an article I wrote for onstartups.com, and it's called The 5-Minute Guide to Cheap Startup Advertising. I talk about that technique there. But in essence, Facebook ads are really cool because there are so many non-techies on there. And although it's not the advertising that hits people as they're searching for a pain point, it is more of like interruption marketing, where someone's on Facebook cruising around and you're just keying into their interests, and a banner, you know, a little ad appears to the right of their profile. But there's so many people, what is there, 700 million on Facebook right now, that it's almost for sure that you're going to find folks on Facebook who are within your demographic, even if it's a kind of an offline niche or more of a just a small niche. You're at least going to find several thousand folks on there. And, you know, even if you don't get the 20 cent clicks, paying 80 cents or a buck to send people to your page, if it's converting well, it's not actually a bad way to go. And it's like I said earlier, if you don't have time to do what we've said in the first four, you know, to do the SEO or infographic or Hacker News, then hopefully you have money. You kind of need one or the other. Facebook ads is probably the first thing that I would try.
The other one that you can try if you're doing business applications is LinkedIn. So LinkedIn has their own advertising network where you can plug in, and it's very similar to Google or Facebook or any of the others, where you can do pay-per-click or pay-per-impression and basically drive traffic to your own site. But again, I think that, or at least I feel like, LinkedIn is a lot more on the business side of things. So if you have a consumer application, it may not do as well. You know, obviously, if it's helping the people to find jobs, then I think that you have a good chance there. But if it's, I don't know, coloring books for kids or something like that, it's obviously, I don't think that it's going to work out as well. But if you do have a B2B application that you're trying to sell, you probably should at least look into LinkedIn ads.
Our next tactic is to go for niche ad networks. And I'm going to throw out a few that I've used, but realistically, you're going to have to search out the specific niche you're in. I've used Influ ads, I've used Buy Sell ads, I've used LaunchBit. Someone emailed, I think, or posted a comment and said, those are all aiming at techies. And it's like, no, they aren't really. There are a bunch of designer sites on here. There's like productivity stuff. It's not just like developers and startups. And so if you look pretty in-depth at these ad networks, if your audience is online at all, it's pretty likely one of those three will reach them. And then the other place I would go to look for how your competitors are getting traffic is to go to mixrank.com, type in your competitor's URL, and it will probably tell you where they're advertising. And so you can get an idea potentially of maybe some niche ad networks. And of course, you can always go to Google and search for niche ad networks or anything that might have advertising slots available for your niche.
So this next one I'm a little bit skeptical of, and I think Rob is in the same boat with me on this, but using Twitter or Facebook to kind of get your message out. And this isn't necessarily related directly to using Twitter or Facebook ads. It's really just utilizing your network and trying to convince other people to either retweet or repost your messages to other people and share it with their friends. I'm a little skeptical of this, mainly because you're relying so much on other people's interests and their dedication towards your product or your offering to essentially advertise it to their friends. And if it's something that doesn't even exist yet, they haven't even tried it. I mean, because again, this whole episode is about building your pre-launch mailing list. It seems to me like this strategy is really not going to work very well unless you have something that is so incredibly compelling that, you know, people want to talk about it.
So I feel the same way. Twitter and Facebook, especially Facebook. So Facebook I use more for personal stuff, and so I've actually never used it for any kind of promotion. Whereas Twitter, I at least talk about the projects I'm working on, and that's what I found it to be more useful for, is to say, hey, check it out, I'm working on this, or, oh, ran into a problem with, you know, X today, and it's a link to it. And so it just kind of gets people involved in the process rather than saying, check out my new product and sign up for the mailing list, right? That's where you come out and you're kind of a marketer and it pisses people off. And so that's how I would say this is more of a casual usage, an ongoing thing. This actually relates back quite a bit to our first tactic, which was utilizing your audience, you know, kind of just keeping people updated on what you're doing, and maybe a few of them will trickle in as well. Our eighth and final tactic is one that's very expensive. It's pay-per-click ads, specifically AdWords. Now, AdWords has gone up substantially in price over the years. I think back when I started using it, I was getting clicks around 50 cents. This was in the invoicing niche. And then they've slowly climbed up, and the average right now is between $4 and $5 for stuff I used to pay 50 cents for. And so we wanted to mention it not as an ongoing stream of traffic, but for a couple reasons. One, because if someone is really seeking out your product, if you have the kind of thing where they're searching for it or searching for a related thing, AdWords really is the best way to get in front of them. And it's the best way to test an idea and to send people to that landing page. And although it can get expensive pretty quickly, what's kind of cool is you can see, without doing a bunch of SEO or without going to all this other effort of building infographics and stuff, you can start to see how many people are signing up for your mailing list based on your landing page. And you can see whether or not your idea, or at least your marketing, is resonating with people very quickly. So if you think of it more as a one-time cost investment to learn from rather than something that you're going to base an entire business on, I actually think it is a decent tactic for starting to build a pre-launch mailing list.
Yeah, it astounds me how expensive pay-per-click has gotten over the past few years. I mean, you would think that as the search volume goes up, the number of times that those ads are shown would be kind of proportional. As a result, the amount that you're paying per advertisement would actually decrease, and that does not seem to be the case at all.
No, I know. When I do my public speaking, I say Google is way smarter than we are. And a huge chunk of their revenue is this. It's AdWords. And so it is going to continue to go up because they are getting so many people involved. They're marketing heavily. They do tons of offline marketing. And the way their algorithms work, they are just going to continually have AdWords going up because that's the best way for them to really multiply their profits. And they need to keep doing that as a public company. To wrap this up, there are obviously a lot of other techniques to marketing an app. Things like going to the press, doing guest posts, podcasts, JV partnerships, etc. But they don't typically work until you actually launched. The one exception, I think, specifically for Josh, who has an affiliate marketing product, is getting like a joint venture partnership where someone does a mailing and then sends people to his landing page. And then as long as he tracks that those people came from a specific mailing, and then when they eventually purchase, you know, kicks back kind of an affiliate commission. That could feasibly work in this niche because obviously affiliate marketing is a big deal. So I think that'll be a big source of revenue. It could be for Josh in the future. I think the final kind of capstone on this is that the first product, your first one, is by far the hardest, because selling a new product to a new audience is the hardest thing to do. There's kind of this old maxim that I'm stealing from someone, but it's you should sell a new product to an existing audience, or you should sell an existing product to a new audience. One of those two things dramatically improves your chance of success. But doing a new product to a new audience is always the hardest. And so if at all possible, you try to avoid that. But obviously, all of us have to start somewhere. And so if you're in that boat, then hopefully this episode's helped you out.
If you have a question or comment, you can call it into our voicemail number at 1-888-801-9690, or you can MP3 it in email or text format to questions@startupsforthestofus.com. Our theme music is an excerpt from We're Out of Control by Moot, used under Creative Commons. If you enjoyed this podcast, please consider writing a review in iTunes by searching for Startups. You can subscribe to this podcast in iTunes or via RSS at startupsforthestofus.com. Full transcript of this podcast is available at our website, startupsforthestofus.com. Thanks for listening. We'll see you next time.